never remain free if they are not willing, if need be, to fight for their vital interests.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Praise Capital A and pass the ammunition.
The Restoration Hour with Pastor Eli James.
Welcome, Christian Israel. Pastor Eli James here. This is Eurofolk Radio. And tonight on the Restoration Hour, you are going to discuss the Project Gutenberg ebook of the Lost Ten Tribes and 1882. That's an odd title, The Lost Ten Tribes and 1882. So maybe 1882 is really significant for Christian identity or Israel identity. But before we get into the book, which I have pasted in the chat room, a couple of announcements. Number one, there won't be any live Voice of Christian Israel tomorrow, because I will be leaving Harrison right after Bloodlines. We will have a live Bloodlines show, Michael and I. And then as soon as that's done, I will be heading toward Makanda, Illinois, where X marks the spot of the two eclipse points. And I will be there to watch the eclipse. If you have a chance, go ahead and listen to and watch the interview that I did with Professor Truth. It's posted on the front page of Eurofolk Radio, and also included with that is a video entitled Why the Jews Are Not the Israelites. Okay, why the Jews are not God's chosen people. And that, of all places, was on YouTube. So I guess YouTube must be hurting so bad because they have doxed so many people that now they have to put good material, good material on, and are allowing. Maybe I should try getting on YouTube again. Maybe if I tone it down just a little bit and not use the J word so often, that they might let me go live on YouTube. That would be awesome. Well, when I get back from my trip, because I'll also be going to Bardstown, Kentucky after the eclipse, then I'll be back next week, late in the week, and we'll do our slate of shows. Now, also, we're going to be upgrading Eurofolk Radio. Has been needing an upgrade for a long, long time. And the webmaster that's doing it right now is putting up simultaneously creating another site of Eurofolk Radio. However, that has to remain off-site until the switch is made. And then that may take a day or two, so we'll have to see if we can schedule that for a Monday and a Tuesday, because service will be interrupted as we make the switcheroo. So, and the site has been needing an upgrade for a long, long time. But also, so I'm going to be in Makanda, Illinois. The weather prognosis is it's going to be sunny. It's going to be rain in the morning, but when the eclipse happens in Makanda, which is around 2 p.m., the skies are supposed to be clear, so I'm really looking forward to that. Okay, so by all means, check out the video that Professor Truth and I did, and there's a part two, which I'll see if I can load that up tonight, I won't have much time to do anything tomorrow. I'll try to load that up tonight, so we'll have parts one and two of that interview, which is all about the prophetic significance of the X marks the spot eclipses. So, and the part two is all about how America fulfills the prophecies of the 12 tribes, the nation in which the 12 tribes of Israel landed and settled. Okay. So America is the new Jerusalem, no doubt about it, but it won't be known as America after the judgment day. It'll just be known as the kingdom. Okay. It'll be known as the kingdom. So here we go. And this is, I'll just read from the Project Gutenberg a blurb here. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. Title: The Lost Ten Tribes and 1882. So I'm curious what the year 1882 represents here. Author: Joseph Wild, W-I-L-D. Release date: the ebook is November 6, 2008. Language: English. And transcribed from the 1880 Robert Banks edition by David Price. And there's an email here if you want to contact these people. ccx074@pglaf.org. So just click on the link that I provided, and I'll load it up with today's show as well. So let's get to it. The Lost Ten Tribes by Dr. Joseph Wild of America. Now, that's not what the, so I guess the, I don't know why they add the 1882 in the, but it is. It says The Lost Ten Tribes and 1882 by Reverend Joseph Wild, D.D., Doctor of Divinity, Pastor of Union Congregational Church, Brooklyn, New York, and London, Robert Banks, Racket Court, Fleet Street, E.C., 1880. So this is an American book, and it starts out with the Great Seal of the United States, the reverse and the obverse being shown here. This device of the Great Seal was adopted by Act of the Continental Congress on June 20, 1782. And readopted by the new Congress September 15, 1789. The Act provided for an obverse and a reverse as set forth in this plate. The reverse is not used. Hold on here. It certainly is used today. Maybe it wasn't used in the early days, but it's on your dollar bill. The reverse is on your dollar bill. Okay. This is a plate of the first and original seal, which by use has been worn out. The one now in use is the second. It differs from the first that, by an accident, seven arrows were left out of the eagle's talon. Oh, okay. Well, it's supposed to have 13. It's supposed to have 13. It's supposed to have 13 olive leaves. The crown, it's the crown of stars is supposed to have 13 stars, but it's a very, very weak rendition of the symbol, okay? By the same author, The Future of Israel and Judah. Oh, wow. We'll have to get a hold of that. The Future of Israel and Judah. Philo Israel says, quote, "We recommend most strongly that all our friends should obtain the book. Once in their hands, we know they will read it to the end." Preface. The following discourse are presented to the public in book form, agreeable to the request of numerous friends. I have selected 20 from 130 which have given to my own congregation to during the past 3 years. I have tried to have them lean one against the other to the end that the argument might be continuous and somewhat complete. The reader will remember, however, that the vast subject of which they treat cannot be fairly and completely presented in such a volume as this. Yeah, it's a work in progress. Also, it should be borne in mind that the language, style, and structure are sermonic. Okay, so it's a sermon. Pulpit literature in these things is peculiar and distinctively characteristic. When I first entered the ministry, I made up my mind that I would try and thoroughly understand the scriptures. I soon found that a large portion was of prophetic nature. Same thing happened to me when I started working on the Great Impersonation. My only intention was to document the bloodlines from Genesis 3:15 and show that the Bible is a history book and a book about two bloodlines and documenting the family. It was more about these bloodlines than anything else, yet the modern churches fail to acknowledge these bloodlines at all. So when I realized this, I said, wow, the Bible is a completely different book from what it's been presented as. Okay, and so one website says it'll be cloudy in southern Illinois Monday afternoon. Okay, it should still be okay, partly cloudy. All right, let's continue. Okay, I had faintly discerned that the scriptures made a distinction between the house of Israel and the house of Judah, and that the prophecies belonging to the one could not, in fairness, be applied to the other, and that some prophecies applied to both. It always seemed strange to me that the people which God said he had chosen for himself should not be known. Well, the prophecy said they will be hidden. The Jews were always known. But where was Israel his inheritance? Good point. Again, I could see no point in the Lord swearing so positively about David's seed and the throne lasting to the end of time. Taking them in a typical sense, they were about the poorest types that I could have been selected, because of the shortness of their existence according to the general mode of interpretation. Just at this point of my experience, I came across a book entitled Our Israelitish Origin by the late John Wilson, the reading of which confirmed me in my convictions and aided me to a better knowledge of the good book of Providence. Hold on, folks, I have to turn on the light so I can see my keyboard. It's getting dark here in northern Arkansas. After some 20 years of experience, I began to teach the principles of interpretation embodied in these discourses. Some 3 years ago, I began to give a series of sermons on the 10 lost tribes. I soon found my own congregation as well as the public were interested and profited with the same as was manifest from the large and constant attendance thereon. By personal interviews and letters, I have been gratified to learn that many have savingly and truly converted to God through these discourses. Especially has this been the case with those who were infidel in faith and action towards God and His Word. I have received hundreds of letters thanking me that the key of interpretation presented had made the Bible an interesting and easily understood book. The interest it created gave rise to numerous requests for copies of my sermons. The notice by the public press now and again intensified interest and increased the demand. To meet this desire, I made arrangements with the editor and proprietor of a weekly paper called The Champion to publish my evening discourses. Now, question, why have I never heard of this book? If it was so profusely distributed in his time, of course, we know why. The Jews suppress all Israelite literature. Anyway. Okay, the interest created gave rise to numerous requests for copies of my sermons. The notice by the public press now and again intensified the interest, increased demand. To meet this desire, I made arrangements with the editor and proprietor of a weekly paper called The Champion to publish my evening discourses. At once, the arrangement was found to be profitable to him, agreeable to me, and admirably suited to the public. So for more than a year, The Champion has been my faithful messenger on this line and will continue to be. It is a weekly paper published at 132 Nassau Street, New York. Price $1 per year. Try getting a subscription to a magazine at $1 per year. I am not personally interested more than this. With its politics and other matter, I have done nothing to do. But for the sermonic matter, I hold myself responsible. I feel free to express my pleasure in the wonderful increase of its circulation. I am glad it goes all over the states, the Dominion of Canada, and is in goodly demand in Great Britain. Why have I never heard of this magazine? Of course, we know the answer to that. Okay. After I had been preaching on this subject for some time, I made, fortunately, the acquaintance of a namesake of mine, Mr. Joseph Wild of Bay Ridge, near Brooklyn. On this subject, I found him remarkably well posted. He had lots of books, pamphlets, papers, and maps on the matter, any or all of which he gave me liberty to use. Through him, my attention was called to the valuable writings of our English brethren on this point. Edward Hine, Reverend Mr. Glover, M.A., Reverend Mr. Grimaldi, M.A., Philo Israel, whoever that is, and a host of others, whose writings have helped me very much. Our English friends have now a vast store of this kind of literature, while so far as I know, we have no home production. This is one reason I feel satisfied in sending forth this volume. Yeah, because it was British Israel who started teaching that the lost 10 tribes, and actually all 12 tribes, had migrated across the Caucasus Mountains and are known now today as the Caucasian people. For years, I have been greatly interested in pyramidology and the teachings of the Great Pyramid at Giza in Egypt. 20 years ago, I had confidence to lecture frequently on the subject, and a few years since, it was in my mind to publish a small work on it. The necessity of such work was wisely and competently taken out of my hands, however, by the appearance of a book entitled The Stone Miracle by Reverend Dr. Seiss of Philadelphia. Now, I haven't heard of that book either, although I'm aware of the book on the stars by Dr. Seiss. I was not aware of this book. So, The Stone Miracle by Reverend Dr. Seiss of Philadelphia. So, we're looking at the development of Christian identity here in America, and the date here is Brooklyn, May 1st, 1879. But let me continue here. This is a book admirably suited for beginners on this line of study, and if one wants to go further to be and be specially informed on pyramidology, why let them get Our Inheritance in the Great Pyramid, a work by Professor Piazzi Smith, Astronomer Royal of Scotland. To this man, God has given a fine mind and a large heart for a special place in work. But what pleases me above all is that this pyramid, being the Lord's pillar and his witness, should so finely tally with the scriptures and providence that the teachings of this monument are in harmony with the principles of interpretation as applied to the prophecies in these discourses. And what he's referring to is that the internal passageways of the Great Pyramid tell the story of from Adam down to the judgment day. If you can read the inches correctly. And I've read several books on this subject as well. But as you go up the grand gallery and higher and higher you go, the fact that earthquakes and shifts in the Great Pyramid throw the timeline off, it is nearly impossible to pinpoint the judgment day as depicted in the Great Pyramid. But we're getting damn close, folks, damn close. By several small engravings, I have sought to aid the mind of the reader through the eye. In the Royal Arms of England, there is considerable history. The position of the lions, unicorn, crown, and indeed all connected with it significantly expressive. In these things, the accidental grouping, so far as man was concerned, were as much under divine supervision as the blundering of the Jews in the crucifying of Christ. So, it's really obvious that this author, this is the preface given by, I'd have to scroll up to remember his name, it's not Joseph Wilde, is doubtful that the Jews are actually Judah. And so this was already a departure from British Israel. So, let's continue. So, divinely considered, a day divinely revealed. We know not the mind of our fathers in the matter of selecting and composing the items that make up the Great Seal, but we know the mind of Providence. The plate of the ragged old stone called Jacob's Pillow is not very distinct, but it is the best we could do. As it is, it will aid the reader in forming a better idea. The stone in shape is an oblong square about 32 inches long, 13 broad, 11 inches deep. At each end is an iron ring much worn and rusted. It is a bluish steel-like color, mixed with some veins of red. It has been in its present resting place 583 years. Okay, he's talking about the Stone of Scone, which is the coronation stone under the throne of Britain. Although it was stolen sometime and moved to Scotland. I don't know if it's ever moved back to England. The main idea I wish to convey in this book is that God is conducting his providence through his ancient chosen people, Israel, whom I believe are found in the Saxon race, and his throne on earth, through which flow the purposes of providence, is David's throne, which I believe to be at present the English throne. Queen Victoria, and God bless her, I believe to be of David's seed. The United States fulfills the role of the tribe of Manasseh. I disagree on this point, but I don't want to quibble. I simply say that Ephraim and Manasseh are the English-speaking Israelite world. Therefore, to understand the prophecies, providence, and the present movement of nations, as well as the future lot and destiny of each, we must read the scriptures in this light. God has made the children of Israel and the throne of David his executive in time on earth. They are his executive for civilization, evangelization, order, and conquest. Through them, God will conquer the world to a universal peace. As Moses was to God, so is Israel. Moses, being a divine executor, was to the people a God. So is Israel to all mankind. Thank you very much. We are the dominion race. Spiritual Israel will come through literal Israel. Okay. I'm not sure if he actually means, by this he means non-Israelites. But Israel will wake up to its true identity in due time. I have expressed myself freely and shall cheerfully grant reviewers, critics, and readers the same privilege. I send forth this book with a pure desire that it may do good. Amen. So mote it be, M-O-T-E. Joseph Wilde, Brooklyn, May 1st, 1879. Where have you been all my life? All right. This is a fantastic book. We're obviously not going to be able to read this whole book, but we definitely will do a couple of episodes on the Restoration Hour in the coming weeks. Okay. Key distinctions. Discourse 1. Quote, "We have a more sure word of prophecy, whereunto you do well that you take heed, as unto a light that shineth in a dark place, until the day dawn and the day star arise in your hearts, knowing this first, that no prophecy of the scripture is of any private interpretation." 2 Peter, certainly not by any Jew. 2 Peter 1, 19 and 20. "I am about to give you a few discourses on prophecy, and in doing so, I desire in the first place to point out to you a very few important distinctions included in the prophecies. Suppose the Bible to be a great palace with its royalty, royal children, servants, and subjects. You desire to go through it and view it intelligently and to understand all about its inhabitants and laws of government. Now, to do so, you must have keys, and you must learn who is who, their place, authority, and work. If not so qualified, you could not pass from room to room, and you might confound the king with some servant, and visitors might be mistaken for the children of the household. Or how about impersonators? Thus, your ideas would be considerably mixed. You would be guilty of talking about the king when you really meant some servant, and of prophesying for the royal children in the name of the visitors. The years, how about the intruders? The years would come and go, but events would not happen as you had prophesied. Each generation would take your report and follow in your footsteps. Thus, confusion and disappointment would keep pace with the passing generations." So, I had a very similar experience with the great impersonation. I was ready to publish in around 1996. And as I was reaching the end, I realized, hey, wait a minute. I am now understanding the prophecies of the Bible like never before, and probably like no one ever has before. And so I had to write two more chapters, which were quite lengthy, which were about the relationship between Yahshua Messiah and the Edomite Jews, and about the prophetic record and how it has been fulfilled only by Israelites and by no other people, certainly not by Jews. So I would have published in 1996, but it took me another 7 years to write and edit, and you have to edit and re-edit many times before you can really publish a book. And so it was not published until 2003. And that was the spiral bound with a blue cover. And I still have a few copies of that left. Maybe I'll put that online. Maybe I'll get $1,000 each. We'll see. Anyway, what is here made a matter of supposition has been a solemn fact on the line of human experience. Men have studied the Bible and Providence in this ignorant and confused way. Absolutely right, sir. Mr. Wilde, theologians have thrown aside all restraints and well-defined limitations and distinctions of the Bible in their assumed liberty of expounding and spiritualizing the same. No matter to them that there is a God-revealed distinction between Judah and Israel, Manasseh and Ephraim, Samaritans and Gentiles, although he does use the term Gentiles, the throne of David and the throne of the heathen. And the Jews don't have a throne. Writers and speakers are guilty of using the words of Judah and Israel in a synonymous sense, though the words stand for different people, history, and prophecies, soon after the descendants of Jacob settled in Palestine. To aid you in seeing this historical confusion and folly, let me call your attention to them separately. Okay, folks, you can see that the quality of this author, this author's writing, is far beyond the mainstream of Judeo-Christianity, far, far beyond. This guy knows what he is talking about. He might not be up to date with the word Gentile, but he certainly understands that the Saxon people, the Anglo-Saxon people, are Israel and not the Jew. Okay, Swamp Fox says, Masons end their prayer, so mote it be. Okay, so it's obviously an early spelling of the word might, so might it be. But it's not the mote in your eye. It's the potential. So may it be. Now, starting with the words, Judah. What does this word stand for in the Bible? In the first place, it is the name of the fourth son of Jacob. In the second place, it was the name of his direct descendants of or tribe, not Jew, Judah. In the third place, it became the name of the portion of the country occupied by this tribe in the Promised Land, before it became known as Judea. In the fourth place, it became the name of a kingdom and government. This fourth name included the tribe of Benjamin and their territory. This is the house of Judah. In the fifth place, it became the name of the whole country of Palestine and is now often so used. Today, this word stands for those we call Jews, who, as they allow among themselves, or pretend among themselves, represent and only include Judah and Levi. On the death of Solomon, the country and tribes finally separated into two houses, kingdoms, and governments. Nine tribes went with Jeroboam and three with Rehoboam, namely Judah, Levi, and Benjamin. The nine-tribed house was called Israel, the three-tribed house of Judah. This separation was about 975 BC, 1 Kings chapter 12. From that day to this, these two houses have never been united, although we have been reunited here in America. But they are to be as scores of statements to the effect that are in the good book, Hosea chapter 1 verse 11. About 580 BC, the house of Judah was taken captive into Babylon, remaining 70 years. Then they returned to their own land and remained till the year of our Lord 70, when Jerusalem was destroyed and they were scattered. So he's only talking about Judahites. He's not talking about Jews. Prophecies referring to the Jews are numerous and in striking contrast to those that refer to Israel. Now we'll have to see if he, by the word Jew, he includes the house of Judah or not. One, the Jews or Judahites were to be a scattered people. Well, the Jews have scattered themselves by following us wherever we go. This fulfills Genesis 3, 14, and 15, where it says, they will eat our dust and follow us around wherever we go. Okay? We are the ones who were scattered by Yahweh, and because our people were disobedient and began practicing paganism, that's how we became known as a Caucasian people, after crossing the Caucasus Mountains. So it looks like he is using the word Jew in both senses, given the modern sense of the Jew and the false sense of Judah. Two, especially persecuted people. Well, that's that we never were until today. We never were persecuted people until recent times. And the Jews never were. That's a lie. Three, to be without a nationality. That's the Jews. But the Israelites, well, we were always, we always had a nation. We always had a land to which we were confined or restrained until we decided to pick up and move on. To be without government. Now, there's there was really never a time in the history of the 12 tribes that we were without government. The Jews never had a location where a government was sustained. They were simply wanderers and vagabonds, as it says in Genesis chapter 4. Five, not to be owners of landed property, though they will have money until toward the latter days. Well, now he's talking about Jews. He's not talking about Israel. Okay, so let me repeat that. Prophecies referring to the Jews are numerous and in striking contrast to those that refer to Israel. Okay, I didn't catch that. And so he is contrasting the Jews against Israel. Very good. So that first sentence, I kind of glossed over that and I missed it. So he's contrasting the Jews with Israelites. Very good. Very good. Let's continue. They were repeatedly robbed. They are to retain a special type of features. They were to be few in number. They were to be a proverb that everybody hates, right? They were to reject Christ, and they still do. To retain the Mosaic service till return to their own land, that, of course, is their interpretation. They never have retained the Mosaic service, and they never still don't have a land. As I said earlier, I think it was on this morning's show, on Genesis to Revelation, the Israeli flag has those two blue stripes at top and bottom with the Star of Remphan in the middle, because those two stripes represent the Tigris and Euphrates on the one hand and the Nile on the other, which land they have always intended to occupy, but which they have never succeeded in expanding beyond Palestine. And they never will, because Yahweh will not allow them to take this land because it's ours. In fact, Palestine is ours as well. However, because Yahshua put a curse upon the city of Jerusalem in Matthew chapter 23, that curse still stands today. Unless that city recognizes that Jesus Christ, Yahshua Messiah, is the Messiah, then unless and until those the people living there accept him as such, that curse will remain in effect. And that's what's going on right now. The Jews cannot help themselves. They simply hate Yahshua Messiah, and they hate true Israel, and they will do so to their dying day. They will not convert. Number 12. They are to keep their name and many such distinctions, none of which should be applied to Israel. Thank you very much. Let me repeat this. They are to keep their name, which is namely Jew, and many such distinctions, none of which should be applied to Israel. All these things have been and are fulfilled or fulfilling, and though men are wonderfully given to spiritualizing, we sure are. Although I have never had that tendency. As soon as I started reading the Bible to find out what it's all about, and of course, I didn't do that until like 1978, when I first started reading through the book and to find out that, hey, this is a book about bloodlines. It's not a book about the religion that calls itself Christianity today. That's a far cry of what the Bible's really about. And so, yeah, we are Israel. Yeah, and ever since I looked at it in that perspective, I was never inclined to spiritualize anything. That's what the churches do. Few, if any, venture to spiritualize Judah's curses. Men and ministers calling themselves Gentiles, which is a false appellation given to them by the Jews, are rude enough to spiritualize the blessings of Judah and, stealing them, apply them to themselves. That's correct. That's called dispensationalism, folks. That is what dispensationalism is. The fact that the Jews, falsely being assumed to be Judah, rejected the Messiah, and because they rejected the Messiah, the promises and covenants devolve onto the Gentiles or the non-Judahites. Well, that's rubbish. That's absolute rubbish. But the word Gentile has had a lot to do with this misunderstanding. Now, Israel, a name given to Jacob after wrestling with the angel, a term applied sometimes to all the descendants of Jacob. In a spiritual sense, those who believe in Christ, so that excludes Jews. 4, a name that covered and included the 9 tribes which went with Jeroboam and formed the kingdom of Israel. Now, why is he saying 9 instead of 10? I don't get that. Maybe we'll find out. They remained a distinct kingdom until now, a nationality. Well, as I tried to say above, when I misunderstood what he was saying. From 975 to 725 BC, they had some 19 kings. They were finally carried captive into Assyria by Shalmaneser, 2 Kings 17. From that captivity, they had never returned. As a body, they never can. Only representatives, as stated in Jeremiah 3:14. One of a city and 2 of a family who did dwell in Judah, the land of Judah, until the days of Messiah. Now, prophecy points out that it was Israel. This is so refreshing. This is so refreshing to read truth about the Bible. It's so rare that an author can make these correct distinctions about the Israelites versus the Judahites and about the Jews. Fantastic. Now, prophecy points out that it was Israel that was to be lost for a while. And of course, the word lost means exiled, and come to light in the latter day. They are known in the scriptures in contradistinction from others by such terms as the following: all Israel, all the house of Israel holy, the house of Israel, men of Israel. Well, now this to me applies to all 12 tribes, I think. Although he seems to be referring only to the lost tribes. All Israel means all 12 tribes. All house of Israel holy means all 12 tribes. To me, house of Israel means all 12 tribes. Although, no, house of Israel, that can be used in contradistinction to the house of Judah. Men of Israel can refer to both Israel and Judah or just to Israel. You have to look at the context of the verses. And God calls them his servants, witnesses, chosen people, inheritance, and seed. The lot, course, and providential portion of this people are very marked from any other, especially from the Jew. Thank you much. Thank you so much. With whom they are so often confounded. The history of the two peoples have been wide apart and as different as they well could be. So this is definitely a Christian identity book, composed in 1879, would you believe? This is not British Israel, folks. This is Christian identity. Outstanding. Number 1, they were to be lost. Number 2, they were to be divorced from the Mosaic law. 3, they were to lose their name. 4, they were to lose their language. 5, they were to possess the isles of the sea, coasts of the earth, waste and desolate places, to inherit the portion of the nations, he says Gentiles, their seed, land, and cities. They are to be great and successful colonizers. 7, before them other people are to die out. 8, they are to be a head nation. 9, to be a company of nations. None of these things are true of the Jews, of course. 10, to be great in war on land or sea. 11, to be lenders of money until the Jews stopped us from doing that. 12, to have a monarchy. 13, to be keepers of the Sabbath. 14, to have David's throne and seed ruling over them. 15, they are to possess Palestine and invite their brethren of Judah to return. And thus I might repeat some 60 positive marks and distinctions setting forth Israel, and yet men willfully persist in confounding them with the Jews, or looking for this great and favored people of the Lord among the lowest of humankind, Indians, Africans, and so on. Oh, what a horribly racist thing to say. Thank you very much. Joseph Wilde, D.D., Doctor of Divinity. Samaritans. The Samaritans were not Jews or Israelites, strictly speaking. They, of course, became Jewish in their customs and worship. Well, actually, they didn't. The Samaritans retained their separateness from both the Judeans and the Judahites. Even to this day, the Samaritans have a religion called Karaism, and they call themselves Karaites. They reject the Talmud. They rely on the Mosaic Law without any Talmudic influence. Okay? So, they were not divorced from the Mosaic Law. However, they are not pure-blooded Judahites or Israelites. There are a lot of Israelites among them and Judahites among them, but Samaria was a mixed-race bag, and so are the Karaites. Nevertheless, I have to give them credit for rejecting the Talmud. They were to lose their language also. Okay, wait a minute. Sorry. Wrong section. So let me get back here. It says they, of course, became Jewish in their customs and worship. Not really. Originally, they were Assyrians. Well, the Assyrians did move some Assyrians down there, but not actually the kings of Assyria did not relocate Assyrians down into the vacated territory. They moved other people, such as the Sephardic Jews from Babylon and Arabs and Canaanites and Edomites were to replace the deported Israelites. Okay. So they were not really Assyrians. When the 9 tribes were carried captive, they were brought and put in their place. And, quote, and the king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Cuthah and from Ava and from Hamath and from Sepharvaim and placed them in the cities of Samaria instead of the children of Israel. So, Hamath and Ava and Cuthah, not sure where those, I don't think these are part of the, if they are to be nominally Assyrians, they were captive also to the Assyrians. They just moved people around haphazardly, just like the Jews created Balkanized nations at the end of World War I. And they were placed in the city of Samaria instead of the children of Israel, 2 Kings 17:24. The Jews and the Samaritans never wholly mixed. That's correct. One was always distasteful to the other. They never were taken captive, and to this day they live in and about Mount Skikar. Skikar. S-C-Y-C-H-A-R. Numbering between 300 and 400. Well, there's still thousands of them today. Okay, but they're not counted as the tribes of Israel or Judah. And they're not counted as Jews either. Benjamin. The tribe of Benjamin has a singular and special place in the history of Israel and Judah. Neither the Old nor New Testament can be well understood unless one understands the place of this tribe of providence. They were always counted one of the 10 tribes and reckoned with them in the prophet. Now, he should have said 12 tribes because they were not reckoned among the 10 lost tribes. They were always reckoned with Judah, and reckoned with them in the prophetic visions. They were only loaned to Judah about 800 years. Read 1 Kings 11. They were to be a light for David in Jerusalem. God, foreseeing that the Jews would reject Christ, kept back this one tribe to be in readiness to receive him, and so they did. At the destruction of Jerusalem, they escaped, and after centuries of wandering, turn up as the proud and haughty Normans. Finally, they unite with the other tribes under William the Conqueror. A proper insight into the work and mission of Benjamin will greatly aid one interpreting the New Testament. He was set apart as a missionary tribe and at once set to work to spread the gospel of Jesus. Most of the disciples were Benjaminites. Then, after 800 years of fellowship with Judah, they were cut loose and sent after their brethren of the house of Israel. It was needful that the lion and the unicorn should unite. Very good. So, is he referring to Benjamin as the unicorn? But the sign of Benjamin is the wolf. So I think he's referring to the 10-tribed house of Israel as the unicorn. Now, Manasseh and Ephraim. Hold on, I need to wet my whistle. The history of these two representative characters is worth your careful study. Of course, the Judeo-Christians don't do this kind of study at all. The whole of the circumstances of Jacob blessing them must be accepted as divinely directed. Manasseh was to be a great people, and so I believe he is. In the United States, I find this promise literally fulfilled. This is the key to the settlement of this land, to the agitations of the Pilgrims and Puritans in England. The mission, work, and place of the United States may be found in the prophecies relating to this tribe. Let anyone examine the Great Seal of the United States and study its design, and surprise will fill the mind that fact, providence, and prophecies do so wonderfully agree. However, Manasseh was the older brother. Ephraim is the younger brother, and therefore the 13th brother. That's why we have 13 colonies. Continuing. The striped escutcheon on its breast, in its beak, a scroll inscribed with a motto, E Pluribus Unum, out of one out of many, as Manasseh was, and of course Israel is, and as the country is building up a grand nationality and oneness out of all nations, nearly, well, only out of the 13. That's what that E Pluribus Unum represents. Doesn't mean we're a multicultural state. We never were intended to be that. Over the head of the eagle there is a glory, the parting of clouds by light. In the opening appear 13 stars, forming constellation Argent on an azure field. So silver on a blue field. In the dexter or right talon is an olive branch, a symbol of peace, Salem. In the sinister or left talon is a bundle of 13 arrows. But it is on the reverse side of the Great Seal that we have a wonder. Here we have an unfinished pyramid. A portion of the top is gone, exactly the same as the Great Pyramid of Egypt is at this day. Anticipating this very day, Isaiah 19:19, quote, "In that day shall there be an altar to Yahweh. And it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto Yahweh of hosts in the land of Egypt." Of course, it was built, the Great Pyramid was built by Adam, Seth, and Enoch, and it's much older than Egypt. Now, it is somewhat singular that the Congress of 1782 should have adopted so remarkable a sign, one that would witness to God and tell of their origin. Yeah, we are Israelites. We are the 13 tribes regathered here, the world's only Christian republic. And in the center is an all-seeing eye, Yahweh. Over the eye we have Anuit Coeptus, which means he prospers our beginning, and that he did. On the base of the pyramid we have in letters 1776, and underneath the following motto, Novus Ordo Seclorum, meaning a new era in the ages. Okay? This is the 12 tribes regathered right here in America. The suggestion, I should say 13 tribes because it does separate Levi. The suggestion of the items upon the Great Seal was from Sir John Prestwich, Bart, whatever that means, an Englishman. He gave the suggestion to the American minister, John Adams, and thus the same were conveyed to the Congress and adopted. How about that? Fascinating, folks. We have in the facts of the Great Seal a series of coincidences that connect this country with the tribe of Manasseh and also Ephraim. When the tribes marched, Benjamin, Ephraim, and Manasseh went together on the west side of the ark, where their homes were westward. On their battalion banner was the figure of a youth denoting activity with the motto, "The cloud of Yahweh rest on them, even when they go forth out of the camp," unquote. Here we have the origin of the cloud on the seal. And when we remember that Ephraim is under the same cloud. And when we remember that Manasseh was brought up at the foot of the pyramid and could see it from his palace home in Memphis, then we get a cue to the figure of the pyramid on that seal. Now this staggers me that he would say this, because it is a fact in a Douglas Petrovich, archaeologist and Bible scholar, did a lot of research on the fact that Manasseh, the individual patriarch Manasseh, was the one who developed what we would call Hebrew. He developed the phonetic Hebrew while he was living there in Egypt. And of course, the Egyptian hieroglyphs had a lot to do with that. So it was Manasseh who developed the Hebrew that was used by Moses. Let's continue. Yeah, he was there. It's amazing to me that he understands this. Another fact of our ancestry and heritage that has been totally buried. Okay. So then we get a cue to the figure of the pyramid on the seal. So there must have been knowledge of the fact that Manasseh, being a resident in Egypt under his father Joseph, was a very powerful person there. Although we're not told of, you know, his position in the Egyptian hieroglyphs, at least most people weren't looking for the name of Manasseh, but I believe that has actually been found in the hieroglyphs. Okay, certainly Joseph, Manasseh, and Ephraim, you would expect that those names would be in the hieroglyphs. Well, let's continue. Pyramid. The pyramid is a wonderful witness for God and his people. This building in Egypt has stood for 4,000 years, actually longer. Finished and complete, it stood for about 3,000 before anybody ventured to find a way into it. Then, at great cost of men, money, and time, a way was forced in by an Arab chief. He was looking for money. There surely is something remarkable that the only thing found in it should be a stone trough. And more singular to my mind, that the Ark of the Covenant and this stone trough should be of equal capacity. Yes, the Ark of the Covenant fits right into what's called the sarcophagus, which is not a sarcophagus. It was designed to hold the Ark of the Covenant, which was an electrically and magnetically charged device, which when placed in the so-called sarcophagus, energized the Great Pyramid. And the laver in which the priest washed his feet in the temple was exactly of the same size. And Solomon's molten sea contained just as much water as would fill the king's chamber in which this trough was found. Wow, that's interesting. Can any man know these things and believe them to be accidental? Of course. Everything is nothing but coincidence. It's evolution. Verily not, he says. They do most assuredly pledge a God and providence. Wow. Wow. What a book. What a book this is. It's so far ahead of its time, it's unbelievable. Ephraim. This word is not only the name of Joseph's son and the tribe, but it is used quite frequently in a generic sense and stands for the 10 tribes in Manasseh. Now he says 10 tribes. I've never heard anybody else talk about 9 tribes. To Reuben by birthright was the lead politically, but it was taken from him and given to Joseph and so to Ephraim. From Judah came the chief ruler, that is Christ, but the birthright was Joseph's. 1 Chronicles 5:1. Not the the scepter was not given to Joseph. There are a lot of people in Christian identity who falsely believe that the scepter was given to Joseph also. Not the case. Throne of David. To this throne, God pledged under oath a perpetuity. Also, he pledged that someone of David's seed should always be on it. It doesn't exactly say that. It says that there will always be someone capable of sitting on the throne. And there were gaps in the leadership of, you know, let me put it this way. The royal throne, Odin, for example, is a descendant of Judah. But he was a stone-cold pagan. Nevertheless, he is in the ancestry of Queen Victoria. And this being so, it follows that they must be now in existence, and that finally all thrones will be swallowed up by this one, when Yahshua sits on it. Queen Victoria is of David, and the English throne is David's. Hence, so are all the other royal thrones of Europe. Hence, all the promises and prophecies referring to David's throne may be found in this line. For prophecy not being of private interpretation, such facts may be proven. Now, Gentiles, let's see how he handles this word. The word Gentile generally embraces all those nations and people outside of the 12 tribes. Actually, that's not true, because if you do cross-referencing on the word Gentile, both Old Testament and New Testament, you will find it more often than not, well over 90% of the time, refers to Israelites. So here he has swallowed the bait given to him by the Jews. Keeping these few distinctions in mind, you will be enabled to read the Bible interestingly and with proper understanding. Prophetic evidence is a strong kind of proof. Study the word on this line and you will find providence and history lending glorious confirmation to the same. Well said, Joseph Wilde. This is a fantastic book. An absolutely fantastic book. So I highly recommend to all Israelites in Eurofolk Radio Land to share this book online, since it's free online. Share it with everybody you know, because they need to know these things. This is true Christian identity teaching well before its time, because I've always given credit for Christian identity to Henry Ford, and of course his main author, William Cameron, who wrote the book, The Covenant People. That is an outstanding read too. The Covenant People, although no author name is given, you can get that online. The author is William Cameron, who was Henry Ford's main editor at the Dearborn Independent. But this precedes it by 30 years, at least 30 years. And so Dr. Joseph Wilde had it figured out, but he still accepted the false designation of Gentile being non-Israelites. That's simply not the case. That is simply not the case. So I'm going to stop here. This book is just a wonderful find. Thank you to the lady who sent it to me by email. I couldn't be more tickled at such a document as this, having been published in America in 1897, this has got to be the first, it's not exactly 2C line, the first Christian identity book published in America. There may have been articles, but this is by far, because he understands the difference and the distinctions between Judahites and Jews and Israelites and Jews. Praise Yahweh for this understanding. Thanks for listening. Take care, everybody. And Yahweh bless you. Bye-bye.
Free people will never remain free if they are not willing, if need be, to fight for their vital interests.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problems, Government is the problem.
Praise Cowboy, and pass the ammunition.
The Restoration Hour with Pastor Eli James.